John Faulkner in Sydney has tried really hard and has been rolled absolutely. I think to find the people to try and form the Liberal Party it would take 25 years. And we haven't got that far. Now the logic of that is clear. A whole bunch of 30 to 40 year olds should get up and do something about it. It's not a job for octogenarians.
That was former Prime Minister and member for Wannon, Malcolm Fraser, speaking at the Melbourne Town Hall in 2014. Welcome to this No Fibs podcast. I'm Wayne Jansen, and in this episode I'll be previewing the battle for Wannon, where there has indeed been a quiet revolution underway in the former Prime Minister's old seat. Wannon local comedian and former Triple J breakfast host Alex Dyson is contesting the seat for the third time, and his support has been growing. At the last election, the Voices of Wannon Group endorsed Alex Dyson, and they have again for the upcoming 2025 election. During the Wannon 2022 Meet the Candidate event, I spoke to Alex Dyson about his 2019 campaign, in which he ended up winning just over 10% of the primary vote and along the way bagged the viral moment of the campaign.
You're running again, and you ran in 2019.
Yes. Right?
And your video. Everyone remembers your video.
Mm.
What put that idea in your head?
Well, it kind of played to my strengths a little bit. That campaign was all about sort of shining a light on the importance of politics, trying to engage some young people who may be understandably bored and disillusioned by the way politicians talk to people. It's very monotonous. It's deliberately vague. And I really wanted to do something political, which would also be engaging. It was a way to communicate the message. And my friends had told me over the years that I was quite a unique dancer. And so I thought by communicating what are super important messages, but in a different way, it could be a way for people who would otherwise, you know, turn on a political ad and immediately mute it or change the channel, would be able to see it, interact with it, and just think a little bit about what their policies are and what their politicians are offering as well. And so, yeah, I was surprised at how successful the interpretive dance went. I got shown on the BBC World News, which was quite a kick. The Russians were involved. They didn't mind it. I'm not sure if Vladimir Putin's going to be coming out and doing a bit of tap dancing soon, but he does a few other interesting things, horses and a bit of judo, but look, I'm happy to stick in my lane with dancing. But I considered going again, but I thought, I really wanted to communicate the to people who potentially saw that, potentially entertained by that, but also thought, you know, politics, it is a serious business, and there's so many people's lives affected by the people who make these decisions and who vote on these particular issues. And I wanted to really solidify the fact that, you know, I have the ability to not take myself too seriously, but I also really take the issues seriously.
Alex Dyson's 2019 campaign had a team of a few people. At the last election, with the endorsement of the Local Voices group, his campaign team grew to 198 volunteers, and together they won 19.5% of the primary vote. That was a swing of around 9.5%, and the community campaign made it into the two-candidate preferred race. At the upcoming election, Alex Dyson only needs a swing of just under 4%, two-candidate preferred, to win the seat off the Liberal incumbent Dan Tehan. In a recent post on Twitter, which Elon Musk wants me to call X, Voices of Wannon announced Alex Dyson's campaign now has 1,000 supporters online and hundreds of local volunteers. We're months out from the election, and if other community campaigns are a guide, those numbers are set to grow as the campaign draws nearer. I recently caught up with the independent candidate for Wannon to have a chat about the upcoming campaign. Welcome, Alex.
Thanks so much for having me, Wayne.
In 2019, you ran and the idea was to get youth engaged, and you pulled about 10% of the vote.
Yeah, I was really, really happy and surprised with the response to my campaign in 2019. I think running in your hometown, being positive and communicating in a different way after 12 years of very divisive politics. And that's internally in parties. We're not even talking, inter-major party negativity. It's internal backstabbing, as ABC got a few documentaries out of that one. But it was great. And to get higher than, you know, the Greens, who have been around for decades, and higher than Clive Palmer, who spent millions on a very quick but very positive campaign was incredible. Yeah.
So you had a tiny team that time. It was you, I think you said, was it your father that helped you out a lot?
I don't think we could even call it a team. We may have been able to field a basketball team, but a soccer team would have been pushing it, and an AFL team, no yeah. chance. We wouldn't have been able to make up those numbers. Yeah.
In 2022, look, just quickly to go into where I was coming from with Wannon. Mm-hmm. I noticed the Wannon group. I knew nothing about them, but mm-hmm. I saw them on social media, and I just really liked the way they were operating. They were just really straight down a business of, you know, the process of what they were doing, mm-hmm. engaging with the community. There was no sort of banter coming out of there. It was all really business-like, right?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, gee, I should keep an eye on this, because I knew that, I realized they were a small group, but I thought they're just like, there was just something about the way they were handling themselves that I really liked. And then Kathy turned around to me and she said, it was quite a while after and before you'd been selected as candidate, actually. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, I'll keep an eye on them. And keep an eye on the Wannon mob. And I sort of said, well, I have been. And I sort of figured they were going to be overachievers. And then they picked you, right? Mm-hmm. So how different was it? They only had a small team still, right, compared to some of the other electorates. It was a small team, especially considering how big the electorate is.
Mm.
How was it the difference between having basically no team and then coming in and having the community, a community team behind you?
It was really, really great, because it is what democracy should be. It should be locals and their knowledge and their contacts talking to their people, and then those people know other people, and you get around to talk to as many people as possible and have those robust conversations where you can, I think the best ideas and the most pressing issues bubble to the surface. So whilst the first time around, obviously there was things I was passionate about, which was the negativity and, I keep trying to not say corruption, but the blatant unfairness that safe seats like my home area of Wannon has been at the rough end of the stick of, alongside things like, climate change, which hadn't been addressed by a number of people, and then sort of up with more people on board, you get to get a big sense of really what communities are talking about, what's important to them, and what are the most pressing issues. And it's also a really humbling experience having more people, because I think all of us, the thing we have in common is we want to help. Okay. But when it comes to me being the candidate, there is such a trust that's given there, which I don't take for granted at all, that people are, putting your face and my face on their fences. They're trusting me to deliver the messages properly, and they're trusting me, should we be given the honor of being the member for Wannon, to deliver on the goodwill, deliver on the things we've been talking about, make inroads in the priorities we've been going for, because it will be a tough thing and you won't be able to do everything, but that's the great thing about having a team is the trust and the collegiality that one has when doing this, because they're all volunteers, none of us are getting anything out of it other than that sense of community, that sense of pride, that sense of achievement. And hopefully once an independent member is installed in one, and then the real benefits start flowing through. But we've already seen benefits, from people working harder, and they're a bit more worried about their jobs, and that makes them work harder, which is also a great, great result, and one which I don't underestimate either.
I was going to ask you, do you think Dan Tehan took you seriously in the first instance at the last campaign?
I can't speak for the incumbents around Australia, how worried they were. The only thing I've sort of heard from people who were, I guess, as close to the campaign as I know, was I think they were not worried, but then they became not worried. That was how I had it described.
He looked very worried to me at pre-poll.
Oh, really? Well, you know better than me. There. It was, you know, it was nice standing on pre-poll and having, you know, my mate from the footy club walk in to vote and take my card and have, you know, the lady who used to do the costumes at the Warrnambool School Musicals, you know, come in and say hello and give me a hug and wish me good luck whilst we're handing out. And that's the benefit of, you know, running in the place that you call home is, yeah, having those local connections. And I think there's a real authenticity around that, that people know who you are. They know that you're a reasonable human being and, you know, you'll make the decisions with the best interests of the people when if you're given the chance to be in a position of power and voting on legislation in the lower house.
So I can't even remember how many volunteers you had last time, but I remember that you were substantially smaller than you know, like Indi here where there were almost 2,000 and I think.
Really? Wow, yeah.
Yeah. How many volunteers do you think you've got yourself this time?
We've got about
it's a big electorate, right?
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know Wannon, it stretches now from about Moriac, just outside of Geelong, through Winchelsea, through Colac, down through Warrnambool, through Portland, all the way to the South Australian border, and then from, you know, the south, the 12 Apostles, Peterborough, you know, Port Campbell, up through Hamilton, up to Ararat at the north, just Pomonal is in it, which is just outside Halls Gap as well. And so, yeah, it's quite a big place, and it does make it difficult to, you know, break outside your bubbles, which is one of the things in politics that is tough. And it is, you know, you want to be able to get in front of people who don't often have a say in things. You want to get in front of people who have differing opinions to you as well, which is a really important thing. And so it's, you know, it takes a while to be able to get into those areas, but overall, it's great. We've got people all over from Snake Valley, which you mentioned off air before, some really nice people. To Portland. I was just having a chat to someone who's going to be helping volunteer at the Hub. So I think numbers wise, we've got about 800 supporters and about 130 volunteers at the moment who are, you know, out doing things day to day, and it will help with, you know, door knocking and handing out flyers and a few things. So always open for more if you're in the boundaries of Wannon, or even if you're not. But it's every one of them contributes to a campaign like this. And when you do what you can do, that's the way that gets over the line, as people in the community independence movement would know all too well.
So how many hubs have you got? I mean, they're the secret weapon in Indi, the campaign hubs. They really are.
Really? Yeah, well, we didn't have any the last two campaigns. And so being able to have a shop front in Warrnambool, which is we're actually launching tonight, will be great. If people coming in, because I think not only it's very difficult to engage in politics, you know, if you just by yourself and you think, oh, I want to help out, but I don't know the first step. And so having something you can walk past, it looks welcoming, you come in, you have a chat to someone, will be really good. And it's not only about, you know, having your say when you're in there and saying what's your most important thing. It could be also young people walking past and go, so what's this deal with preferential voting? Like, I've heard about it, and you know, what matters? And what's the lower house and upper house? I keep hearing about it. And wait, so are they a senator or that? Yeah, those kind of things that you'll be able to get a bit more info about. So yeah, being present and being there and having a presence in the community is something that I think will be really great this time around for a campaign in Wannon for a local independent.
Yeah, because I mean, look, one thing that, you know, in smaller city electorates, they're a lot different to these big rural ones. And these big rural ones, it's like a different town can be like a different world politically as well. So that's where the hubs are really quite powerful, because they take it into the you know, it becomes hyper local, which is
absolutely.
I'm just going through my list here.
Yeah,
I remember last time, you know, like I heard a podcast. I can't remember whose podcast it was, but you were on it, so I had to listen to it.
Yep.
And you're talking about cost of living. And one thing I remember when I was down there for the last election, and it was probably one of the first times it hit my radar, was Airbnb, you know, short-term rentals, and how it was impacting the coastal towns. Now, for me, the housing crisis is about public housing, first and foremost. But in tourist areas, it is a major issue.
Yeah.
Because every councillor that you spoke to, I think I've forgotten the name of the town, but there it was a car event.
And I was at a car show and shine, there. Show and shine in Colac.
Yeah.
When I saw,
yeah,
well, and saw some very, very good looking motor vehicles in Colac.
Yeah. But that, yeah, that whole thing about Airbnb, that was on all the councillors' lips.
Yeah, and particularly the councillor in Aries Inlet telling me the median house price in Aries Inlet is $1.8 million now. Yeah. I don't care where you're from when you're, you know, $800,000 above the median Melbourne house price, you know, it's some pretty expensive territory, and it's a great part of the world and people who live there love it. They go down the beach, they, you know, have the local farmers markets. But if you're a young person there who wants to get their first job and out of school and start working at the cafe, how are you going to save for a $1.8 million house? You're going to have to move inland and commute, as a lot of people do, you know, they move inland, and then unfortunately the people from Melbourne come down for the weekend and they're like, where's my barista? You know, it'd be great to get a coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Because I went for a drive around some of the tourist towns on the way back. I took the coast road. And there was, I saw about three cafes that were closed because they couldn't get staff.
Yeah, in the window, the Polo Bay, I took a photo, staff wanted. I heard 50% of Port Fairy is short-term rentals. I was chatting to a young person about 23 years old in Port Fairy who was lamenting the fact that, it's taking over your parents' house or nothing really there. And so it's, that she was a bit disappointed with that. And it does affect communities as well because, you know, the more empty houses you have, the less people there are playing at the local footy club or going to the local school or, you know, having the local musical or church service, like these kind of things in a small town.
Get workers and it impacts the whole economy.
Until summer. And so to have a thriving community, it's important that there's a sensible mix of, long-term renters alongside short-term renters, because you absolutely do not want to get rid of short-term rental in these places. But when it comes to politicians' plans for building houses or, you know, fixing the housing crisis, which we're deep into now, it's been with us for quite a while, they seem to focus on one thing. It's either build, or it's cut immigration, or it's just like, it seems to be a tentpole, you know, popular single word slogan as to how they're going to turn this around. But it's difficult to see from the major parties a nuanced, you know, long-term vision of how we don't smash our economy by making these broad statements, but we do ensure that young people aren't, you know, we create a two-tier society of, you know, the haves and the have-nots. And so I'm really keen to be involved in the solution to this and have a mix of many different levers that you can pull and balance in order to get housing under control and not, you know, have, as I was at a housing conference in Lawn last week, the stat coming up that, you know, rents rose 14% in the last 12 months and income rose 3.8%.
That's a big problem.
How are we going to turn this around? Like, it's unsustainable. It's going to be bad for everyone. If everyone's putting all their money in housing, disposable incomes for businesses, who's going to come and buy their things?
And people are not creating businesses too if they're dumping all their money in housing as well. It's all
exactly,
it's funny,
right?
Because my take on it is the first thing that needs to be fixed is public housing, which was once a lever that the government could pull to control the housing markets, and it's just in such a rundown state that
I was talking to a lady in Anglesey a little while ago who received some public housing in Anglesey. She was fleeing a family violence situation and she went there with her kids, and she, you know, volunteers at the canteen and the kids go to school, and it's a great member of the community in Anglesey. Now, if that house was to the private sector, it probably would have been purchased by a holidaymaker who, you know, isn't on the ground and creating the great communities that we see along our coastline, which are so attractive to go and visit. And so you're absolutely right. Public housing also needs to be a great part of it because, family violence is contributing to the housing crisis, you know, family breakdowns, those sort of things. It creates, you need an extra house. It's,
well, you know, like people don't leave violent relationships often because they've got nowhere to go. And yeah, that's really dangerous. So,
yeah. So having a plan around it, like a national housing plan, is something I called for last time. And I don't think has, you know, properly been addressed by the people in power at the moment. I know David Pocock has been bringing that up as something he would like to see in there, but yeah, that's still stalling for time, which stalling for time is not a great thing to do in a crisis, I think.
So David Pocock, right? You were at his campaign launch in 2022. In 2022. You're going to bring him down to Warrnambool? Take him down to Warrnambool?
I'd love to bring David to Warrnambool, show the sights. He gets in the cold river up in Canberra and the ACT, so he'll be very at home in the cold waters of Warrnambool in the southwest.
Hell man, isn't
but,
he?
yeah, but he's, you know, he's a very busy man and is representing his community very well. So yeah, if he manages to make it out, that's fantastic. It's a big AFL town though. I'm not sure how many rugby union fans there are around the streets, but I know there are a lot of fans of what he's been doing, particularly, you know, just recently highlighting the incredible highway robbery that we're getting as the largest LNG producer in the world, exporting a lot of our gas for little to no return for the people of Australia whose resources it belongs to. It's incredible.
Yeah, we're importing it.
Paying European prices to buy our own gas back, Wayne.
Yes,
it's quite miraculous. We're getting one of the rawest deals. And I was at a talk the other day from Richard Dennis from the Climate Institute, talking about, you know, the biggest exporters of other things. I mean, second biggest Qatar, but also Saudi Arabia, the biggest exporter of oil. You know, the people don't pay to go to school, you know, in Qatar. You know, they don't pay for childcare in there because the government takes care of that from the taxes. And he's talking about Saudi as far as a petro state goes. When the price of oil goes up, they lick their lips and go, beautiful, we're in here. When the price of gas goes up, yeah, in Australia, like, oh no, our bills are going to be so high.
Well,
now
nothing changes. Aren't they static prices?
We don't get the benefits of a gas price rise. We're just even though we're the biggest exporter in the world. It's quite remarkable. And so having independents in there who have no skin in the game when it comes to lobbyists from those big businesses who like to roll around the corridors of power. Yeah, it'll be great to get a better deal from our offshore, you know, our resources, which we can't get back now. The stuff we've sold is gone. That money is gone. We cannot retrieve it. We need to just make a better decision as soon as possible.
So what we're talking about, money.
Yep.
Climate 200. You got a little bit of funding very late in the campaign last time.
I did, yeah.
But you've got more substantial support this time around.
Yeah, well,
which is going to make you a bit of a target with the Libs.
Well, they've offered it. I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing in these situations, Wayne, as the candidate. You sort of, you toss up. It's like, you know, do you accept funding from this body who, you know, have done some good things? You know, they've supported some really intelligent, smart, pragmatic candidates in the past who've got into Canberra and keeping the bastards honest there, you know. But I'm also really big on transparency. I think money is, you know, in politics is super
it's
unfortunate. It's unfortunate. It's a necessary evil at times, but you do think about, you know, there's conflicts of interests and there's the perception of conflicts of interests. Like I'm the same man who ran in 2019 with no money as I ran in 2022 with a little bit of money and sitting here talking to you right now on the cusp of, having the opportunity to request funds from Climate 200, but currently thinking about, we've got a bunch of local support this time. I'm confident of our message. And I'm also conscious of our volunteers, and I've got a duty of care to them to make sure that they don't get sucked into the scare tactics that people have around organisations such as Climate 200, who, you know, from all my dealings with them, are pragmatic people who, because $1.4 billion, I think, is spent in environmental causes in Australia, whether it's Conservation Foundation, you know, Save the Koalas. Like, people spend a lot of money and give a lot of money very generously to these organizations every year. But the amount of, you know, policy change that the government does and, you know, environmental, poor environmental great, policies shows that, you know, there it could be a better use of money to invest in independent candidates who are going to take these sort of issues seriously and help Australia's environment and natural resources in a way through policy, you know, and good policy. Yeah. So, yeah, it is one of those things. I haven't accepted the help just yet. I'm very happy that people are around and Climate 200 exists and can do those things. But I also want to, you know, you want to be seen as the independent candidate you are. And occasionally bullying works sometimes, yeah. Wayne. And you can go, all right, I'll just beat you without it. Now what are you going to say? You know? And so, it's you've caught me on this podcast in the mix of those decisions. And some people are like, you know, it'd be great to win without it, be super independent. You go into parliament and you're, you know, the people don't have this fear that you're, you know, beholden to a activist group as it gets labeled, or you get, you know, called, you know, by a color that the media have taken it and run away with.
Yeah, I noticed. But other one, but the
other, yeah. Well, I know I'm well on the Indi Kathy McGowan and Helen Haynes, you know, regional Victorian train, in which we need better trades, but also better roads and like these kind of things, because you know the regions have different needs to the city. So you got to be a member for the region. You're not a you know carbon copy of independents from other places. But the other train of thought is, hey, you know, here's a group who whose only request, if you're accepting money from them, is that you take a science-based approach to climate change, you prioritize integrity in politics, and you work hard for gender equality and respect for women. You know, that's aligned values that Alex Dyson runs with. So I'm happy to have them as part of the campaign. And you think, well, you know, let the major parties run their scare campaign. I'm happy to have that conversation. Where do you get your money from? You know, let us know. And I think the only reason people have a problem with it is because they know they are influenced by their donors. So they assume that I am influenced by my donors, even though it's simply there to help people. And I personally, I'm not getting paid at all. It's actually the small businesses in Warrnambool we use, like Star Printing to print our flyers, Mr. Walter Graphic Design. You know, you've the petrol stations we use around Warrnambool that this money goes to. And so, it's a bit of a internal conflict you have with yourself. And you'll be the first to know, Wayne, when, you know, the money hits the account, or I decide to go it alone, I'll let you know for sure.
Okay, cool. It's funny, you know, like because you had that smear video the other day, and I sort of thought, I had a bit of a chuckle at it. You posted it on Twitter, I think it was, and
I just put up an Instagram reel because the smear campaign has started. They got a senator from the Northern Territory to get a shopping list of. Either half true or completely untrue things
funny
about
because
me.
This stuff doesn't work.
It does a little bit. Like I can see why people are concerned that money is in politics. I don't begrudge anyone who's you know concerned that I'm influenced by other people. If people they trust tell them that, then it's just up to me to get and talk
may
to people.
Not get anyway. You know, like my experience in Indi is, look, way back in 2013, Voices for Indi was the political party in disguise.
All
they've done is they've shifted that to Climate 200, right?
Yeah.
But what?
Yeah, that's the thing. If I don't accept the money, are they going to say it anyway? So you know, that's the other thing you've got to take into account. Yeah.
But you know, like when. Because in small communities, especially if you've got hubs around the place like they do in Indi, And everyone knows one another in those towns. And they look at this and they say, no, no, this person's not part of any of that. And they just know that it's, you know, like that it's not true. So it doesn't work so well in rural towns anyway.
Yeah, they do. I was standing at the footy with a couple of mates I played footy with the other day, and someone else was mentioning whether, you know, I'm part of the Teals. I'm like, well, no, because I've been running as an independent in this seat before that term was coined, you know. So just because some major party who have a glass house of their own donors start sponsoring Facebook posts trying to paint me in that way because it suits them politically, do I just give up and go, yes, I am a Teal because of this? Like, it's unfair to allow people to frame you in that way. But you've just got to stay true to your own values. And you're right, you know, it, these local campaigns, they know that you're a decent bloke who, you know, could shank a drop punt every now and again. But other than that, is not going to be influenced.
Because the other campaign.
Yeah.
Day Lee in Fowler. And she really worked hard to distance herself from the community independents, you know, in Goldstein and things like that. And that upset a lot of people in the broader Voices movement. And I thought to myself, no, if I was her, I'd do the same thing, because she isn't running that style of campaign. So the people in Fowler don't see that on the ground. So they've got nowhere to sort of touch reality with what's really happening in places like Goldstein and Warringah and what happens in Indi. So my thought is that those campaigns probably work better in electorates where there is no community candidate that people can see. So they've got nothing that they can see in front of them to tell them otherwise, kind of thing. So,
yeah,
I don't know. My thing on scare campaigns is that's what they are, and if you treat them like that, most people will see through it.
I'd hope so.
You're right. You could. So, what are the other big issues this time, do you think, in Warren?
Well, it really depends. Like, it's incredible how frequently the roads get brought up, because I think it's a daily reminder of the neglect a seat like Warren gets. You know, it's a great part of the world to live. We've got so many great things in many ways, but every day when you're driving around and your car's copping it, like I spoke to a bloke, he's like, I got a new car, it's got 20,000 Ks on it, and I need to get the axles fixed, and it's not covered by insurance because it's general wear and tear from the roads. It's that gets brought up a lot, but it's when it comes to like housing and childcare and health, that is another big thing that is brought up, and there's so many interconnected issues with that. We sort of touched on it before, but talking to a bloke, like I'm talking to multiple parents who they're treating childcare now like an MCC membership. You've got to get your child on at birth. Otherwise you're going to be waiting around. Guy sitting next to on the train replacement bus to Warrnambool, Jasper, and started talking to him. He's like, we almost had to move back to Melbourne because we just couldn't get anyone to take care of our kids. We would have to quit our jobs or it's go to a place that can take care of our kids while we do that. And so I think depending on the stage of your life you're in, that's massive. But health and mental health has been brought up a fair bit alongside housing as the other big issues I'm hearing around the place. And so it's been great. We've got another couple of months of going out and listening before we really, you know, knuckle down, focus, and go spread out all the information we've been given and go, let's figure out what we're going to prioritize and how we're going to prioritize that in these areas. And so it's something that we really wanted to be community led, and that's not only from the people doing it, but it's also the issues that we'll be campaigning on in the lead up to the election.
So when you finish all the listening and that, are you going to do a report? The Warrnambool mob did a report beforehand last time.
Yeah, you utilize the What Warrnambool Wants report that the Voices of Warrnambool put together, and I guess that then feeds into the community members that you talk to around the place, because not everyone, you know, has time to go and have a kitchen table conversation and talk to it. And it is difficult to get the word out and, you know, advertise in the papers. Hey guys, we're Voices for Wanton, and come down and let us know, you know. So, you know, the What Wanton Wants report, whilst extremely valuable, will be one pillar of the campaign. And so whether that comes out in a, you know, actual leaflet form and policy agenda, I'm not sure, but we'll certainly have them up on the website. We'll certainly make sure. It's difficult as an independent to, you know, start promising money, but it's definitely promising what you'll be fighting for from day one of being the member and trying to deliver on. And, you know, if my inkling is correct and the other people's inkling, and if you see the data that comes through when major parties make promises to seats with a razor thin margin. Like I was just looking at the other day, Bass in Tasmania had $500 million worth of promises. There was on a 0.5% margin. Eden Monaro, I think, had about $800 million of promises. They're at a 0.9% margin. And Wanton, which was on a 10.4 before the independent campaign last time, it got $14 million of promises and $0 from the coalition and $0 from Labor. And so it's, once there's an electorate, you decide we're not going to put up with this anymore, vote differently. I've got a feeling that more prime ministers will start visiting. I've got a feeling that more money will start coming into the community, or more, at least more promises. Even if I can't get it done and someone withholds the money from me, I think the next election will be a windfall for the people of Wanton who've been neglected for a while. And so, it's an unfortunate game you've got to play with politicians who have a proven track record of treating electorates that way, but I don't think it's a game that the people of Wanton are unprepared to play, given the raw deal they've been getting.
So Wanton, of course, is famously Malcolm Fraser's old electorate, old stamping ground.
I visited a farm right near the airport the other day that he had constructed to land the 737 back in Hamilton, because it needed to accommodate that size of plane to get back from Canberra,
So he was, you know, Malcolm Fraser, before he died, where was it? It was the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre. And he had some very choice words to say about both the major parties, right? So he was a big fan of young people forming their own party. How do you think he might see your campaign? An independent, your first campaign run was to engage young people. Then you had the community. Do you think there's a bit of the Malcolm Fraser in there, the provocateur, the rebel?
I think he'd like it. I've had a few older members of the community here compare it. He's saying when he was in his 20s, he'd drive his ute to the farm gate, go in and introduce himself and, you know, have a chat to the person there. I want to be as, you know, as available and as pragmatic and as approachable as that. So that's very inspiring for a young candidate who's trying to do the best for his home area. So, yeah, I'd hope that it'd be something. But I think I just want people to be informed about politics. If you read up on the different parties and you're across it and you vote for someone for your values, I don't mind if it's not me. Like I'm not here going to say anything to get people to vote for me. Being, you know, as informed as you can, or doing it yourself. You could run as an independent against me if you've got a particular issue that you think I'm not taking care of, you know, or if you think you want to join and make a noise in the independent campaign for that, that could be another way to do it. I think it suits politicians for people to tune out. And we've seen the patronization and the negative campaigning, which has rightfully turned a lot of people off. Unfortunately, that just means they get to do a little bit. It's the status quo continues, you know, the more tuned out people are. And so, I'm really keen to get people involved. And if they want to do it in the Alex Dicey independent campaign, fantastic. We love to have people on board and chatting and nice and positive and, you know, a little bit of a tournament of ideas. But if you want to do that in other parties, that's awesome too. Yeah.
Okay. One, Bells is now in your electorate, Bells Beach.
It's right on the cusp. Yeah, the line goes sort of just south of Bellbrain. I'm not sure if the wave itself crashes onto the Wannon beaches or whether it's in Corangamite. We're going to wait for the official border to be.
Because my last question was, if you win, are you going to ring the bell?
Ring the bell. Oh, that's not a bad one. A few people have asked if I'm jumping in the breakwater, which is where my first campaign started. So, yeah, look, I'm sure we'll celebrate in many ways, but it's pretty much down to business as well. I remember running into Monique Ryan after she won the seat of Kooyong, and she said she was just setting up her government email address, and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm exhausted, and the election for me was the finish line, but for you it was the starter's pistol. So whether or not I've got time to be catching a couple of waves, getting in the green room around Bell's Beach when you've got, you know, emails to set up and you've got, you know, prime ministers to talk to and say, what have you been doing neglecting us? We would like a little bit better, a better deal. Thank you very much. Yeah, it remains to be seen yet, but I'll cross that bridge when we come to it, Wayne, or I'll jump off that bridge when we come to it.
Well, thanks for joining us, Alex. And thanks hopefully so we get to chat again soon.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening and hope you enjoyed this NoFibs podcast. Until next time, goodbye.